Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Kicking off the third and final hour as we welcome aboard the very talented Jason Sobel, senior golf writer for Action Network HQ, joins us now. Hey, Jason, Mark Melusis, Andrew Bogish, thanks for a couple minutes this morning.
Good morning, fellas. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, Jason, doing well. There's a lot to get into with what we all just witnessed out at Shinnecock Hills over the last 4 days. Let's start with the winner in Koepka. Winning back-to-back U.S. Opens, not many have been able to do that, what have been able to accomplish there. Put into perspective what Koepka's been able to do over the last calendar year, winning back-to-back Opens.
This is a guy who plays his best golf at major championships, and I have no problem with that. He's kind of got the Andy North resume going on right now, which is three career wins and two of them in major championships. That's okay. If all you do is win major championships, like being an NFL player, all you do catch touchdowns, that's okay.
Yeah.
We're all right with that. So he looks absolutely unflappable down the stretch. I know there's a tendency for recency bias on Monday mornings after golf tournaments, and I wrote about this in my column on Action Network last night, but you look at a guy and you say, well, if he can play like that every week, he's going to win a lot of these. Well, yeah, that's the whole point. If he could play like that every week, he'd be Tiger Woods back in his prime. It doesn't work that way. That said, I think Koepka's probably got a couple more major championships in him. He's only 28 years old. The ceiling is very high for him. I think that at some point we start talking about him with the other guys his age that have a few major championships with, you know, Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy. He now has one more major than Justin Thomas and Dustin Johnson. It's pretty impressive stuff so far.
Jason, in particular, what about his game made him the one that survived the weekend at Shinnecock?
Just the nerves. And Brooks Koepka said it afterwards, where everybody was chasing bogeys on Saturday. So many guys were chasing birdies on Sunday when it was so much easier that Brooks Koepka went out there and made a whole bunch of clutch pars down the stretch, and that is really what propelled him to this title. And the fact that he stuck in there, I believe during Friday's round, at one point he was 7 over par. He was looking at the cut line, and his caddy said to him, hey, look, we're still in this. We're not out of it. Let's go. And he was able to grind back, obviously make the cut and get into contention and just sort of stick around it, and that's what you need to do at a U.S. Open. I know this maybe wasn't necessarily smoothest U.S. Open. You look at some of the scores, they all look like roller coasters based on the way the course played over 4 days, but he was able to stick in there, like I said, make a lot of pars, and that's going to win you a U.S. Open more often than not.
Jason, let's talk about the course in and of itself, right? They had 14 years to try and get it right. Do you think the United States Golf Association, the USGA, should be roundly criticized for the way that they handled the last 4 days, or specifically the weekend at Shinnecock?
Yes. I mean, look, the PGA Tour runs 45 events every year, and we never talk about their course setup because they usually get it right. The USGA runs one tournament at this level every single year, and it gets wrong every single year. At some point, something has to change, and I know people out there are sitting there saying, well, it's supposed to be hard. That's what we want from a U.S. Open. Trust me, I have sounded that alarm for years. I love seeing a hard, difficult U.S. Open. The problem is when it borders on unfair, and I think what happened on Saturday was that luck was being rewarded more than skill, and that good shots were being penalized and bad shots were being rewarded, and it was the opposite of everything you want to see from a golf course setup. And then they went out Sunday and being very fearful of all the criticism they'd received the day earlier, the USGA went out and probably set it up way too easy yesterday. And it was fine. I thought yesterday was fun and it was good. But they set it up where Tommy Fleetwood shot 63 and legitimately could have shot a 60 because he had a bunch more chances to make some putts and actually threw a bogey in there as well. So I thought they went too far the other way on Sunday. At some point, if you're the USGA, you say, you know what, we're not very good at this. we have to bring in the professionals to set up the golf course for us. We'll tell them what we want, and they'll get it done. And I don't know why they don't do this. If you're not very handy around the house and you say, hey, I'm going to redo my kitchen, it's not going to work out very well for you. Why don't you bring in a contractor? And they won't do that.
Well, why won't – I mean, why wouldn't they do that? Because you're watching, it's an unbelievable course, right? It's an unbelievable setting. I know Mother Nature could come into effect, but, you know, you almost played three different tournaments in the span of 4 days. You had the first couple days, wind played a role. Then you had on Saturday what was completely like carnival golf, and then – it was almost like they were playing some nondescript tournament in August on Sunday where guys, I mean, I'll give Fleetwood all the credit in the world. I mean, you cannot go from Saturday to a guy who almost set a U.S. Open scoring record on Sunday.
All I will say, and I don't think this is by any measure the strategy of the USGA, but if instead of just having the toughest golf course of the year, they want to have sort of the most interchangeable tournament of the year, I actually don't mind what they did. I don't think that they tried to do it this way, but if they are going to mess this up every year anyway, if they're going to be inconsistent from day to day, hey, let's go and have really tough Saturdays and really easy Sundays and sort of reward the player that can play both an easy golf course and a tough golf course. I actually kind of like that idea, but that's not what they're going for. So they probably need to call in the professionals who do this on a regular basis. There's ego involved, there's hubris involved, there's tradition involved, and that's why they're not going to do it. But they'd be right to do that. And quite frankly, once you have players, world-class players, who are calling for the PGA Tour to go set up the USGA's golf course, you should probably start listening to them.
Jason, then we get to Phil Mickelson. Neither Mark nor I really qualified to answer this question because we don't play the game. Should Phil have been DQ'd Saturday? Should he have pulled himself out? What should he have done in the wake of the meltdown on 13?
Okay, bunch of kind of different moving parts here. Let me walk you through it. First of all, no idea what he was trying to do there. I think it was sort of a screw you to the USGA. I don't think it was a screw you to golf. It wasn't a screw you to fans, wasn't a screw you to his fellow players. This was about the USGA. Phil's not doing that at Augusta National. He's not doing that at the Open Championship. This is about the USGA. Secondly, if he wanted to, Phil could have fell on his sword. Phil could have walked off the golf course afterwards, said, I turned 48 years old today, had my first senior moment. I have no idea what I did out there. I just hope that I didn't ruin my reputation among these great fans who have cheered for me for so long. And instead, he said, well, I tried to manipulate the rules and use them to my advantage. That wasn't the right thing to say. Thirdly, it's not cheating. It's not any more cheating than LeBron James taking 8 steps to the hoop and dunking. Is it a violation of the rules? Yes. Should he be penalized for that violation? Absolutely. But this isn't cheating. This isn't like, hey, I'm throwing spitballs out there and I'm actually out there cheating the game. So the whole cheating thing I thought was a little overboard. The penalty itself, now we get to the disqualification. By the letter of the law, I thought he should have been disqualified. I looked over the rules. I don't think that we should sit here and say, Phil Mickelson's the worst person ever because he raked a putt that was moving while he was down 15 shots at the U.S. Open. I don't think it was that bad. I don't think his reputation is forever besmirched. But I do think by the letter of the law, he should have been disqualified. But the fact that he wasn't disqualified, you can't withdraw yourself from a golf tournament. It's very much like Tiger Woods when he hit the flag stick and took a bad drop at Augusta a few years ago. They let him stay in the tournament. If you're a competitor, if that's what they're telling you to do, you play in the tournament, you keep going. Sorry, guys. That was a whole lot of stuff. Like I said, a lot of moving parts there.
All right, so he should have been disqualified, but for the rules, if you hit a moving ball, it's just a 2-stroke penalty, correct? But he should have been disqualified?
Yes, because first of all, there's a rule about the spirit of the game and sort of it's almost like an unsportsmanlike conduct penalty, and they could have sort of tagged that on. Secondly, there's a rule that says if you stop or deflect a ball intentionally that you're subject to disqualification. And the USGA tried to explain it away by saying, well, he didn't stop it and he didn't deflect it. He just hit a moving ball. And so I didn't quite buy that explanation from them.
So if it wasn't Phil, do you think the decision might have been different?
Maybe. Maybe. Although, look, if Phil's out there to sort of screw over the USGA for some reason, I don't know why the USGA would want to help him save face.
Yeah.
We're talking to Jason Sobel, Action Network, covers the PGA Tour, U.S. Open, complete Brooks Koepka, your 2018 champs go back-to-back. First time we've seen that since Curtis Strange has been able to accomplish that feat, Jason. What about going back to Shinnecock? I mean, it's an unbelievable layout. It really is. It's a tremendous course. They had 14 years to get it right. They couldn't get it right this go-around. Do you think they'll be back to Shinnecock anytime soon?
Yeah, I do think they will. In fact, I think they're going back there in 2026. I could be wrong. I thought that was announced
already. Oh, was that announced already?
So,
okay.
I think so, and I'd have to look it up. But I thought that they're going back there 8 years from now. In any case, yeah, they should go back there. It's a great golf course. The problem that we're finding with some of these courses is the course was built in 1891, and it was built very specifically toward the dimensions and the standards of what golf was, 127 years ago. Well, they didn't have green speeds of 15 on the stimp meter 127 years ago. So it doesn't necessarily work under the same parameters of what we look at as a championship golf course right now. So I think that's where you start to lose the golf course, when you try to have a course that was built so long ago, but you're trying to modernize it and give it green speeds and give it rough length that isn't necessarily what that golf course is kind of supposed to have. So I think you run into some trouble with that. Then again, if you have the green speeds at 11 on a stimp meter, which is sort of your maybe a little quicker than your normal muni course would have on a Sunday afternoon, these guys are going to go out there and shoot 59 every day. So I get it. You have to trick it up. You have to toughen it up. But I don't know exactly where that that sort of barometer is, where you cut it off and say, look, this is how the course needs to play, and this is as tough as it can get before it gets overboard.
All right, Dustin Johnson, the putter, really failed him on Sunday. I mean, he would have been right there. What do you have, three putts on Sunday in the final round? That's going to be one that's going to haunt him a little bit. Had a four-shot lead going into Saturday, and it shoots a 77. Everyone comes back into the play second-to-last grouping, can absolutely bomb it. Buddies with Koepka, the putter failed him on Sunday.
I believe that's what the analytics guys would call a regression to the norm, because he had 17 one putts over the course of the first two rounds and looked like he would never miss anything. His strokes gained putting was ridiculous. I think he was picking up 8 shots on the field over the first two rounds just on the greens alone. So at some point, something's got to give. You're just not going to be able to keep that up for 4 consecutive days. And that's what happened for DJ. I thought he played well. I didn't think he played terribly. I don't think he choked away this golf tournament. Had a high score on Saturday, but everybody had high scores on Saturday. So I don't really put that on him. And he just got outplayed yesterday. So he's going to win more of these things. I really believe that. Koepka said in his post-round interview yesterday that he thinks DJ's going to win more. He thinks DJ's one of the greatest talents we've ever seen in the game of golf. And it's hard to argue that when you look at his athleticism, you look at how far he hits the ball, you look at his touch around the greens. He's sort of the total package. It's just a matter of putting it all together on more major championship Sundays. But look, a guy can win a U.S. Open on Oakmont. I'm willing to give him a few more down the road, because that's about as hard as it gets too.
You know, Jason, Andrew and I talked about it earlier on. So him and Koepka worked out together Sunday morning before the tee off Sunday afternoon?
They always do. They share a trainer. They live in South Florida. They hang out a lot together. In fact, Koepka said he had missed almost 4 months of time with a wrist injury earlier this year, and DJ was one of three players that he actually saw and spoke with during that time, and he almost sounded like he had a chip on his shoulder. He said, look, all these guys, you see them all the time. We're a quote-unquote family. We're all buddies. And then you go away for a while, and you never even hear from these guys because they're out playing golf. He almost sounded like he wanted to kind of stick it to the rest of the tour. Hey, you guys forgot about me. I just want to remind you that I'm still here.
Yeah, I mean, that's strange. I mean, so they're spotting for one another. I could understand Koepka, but, you know, it's not surprising. I mean, sometimes people are phony and fake and whatever. They're going to tell you one thing, and then all of a sudden you go away, and you learn about people in those instances. So I'm sure Koepka learned about a lot of people in that instance. But I find that a little bit weird. I mean, you're in the second-to-last grouping. I know they're good friends, Jason, but it's a little strange where you're – You know, you're about to play. A major is on the line. Both of them are going for their second U.S. Open. Koepka's going for back-to-back. And basically, they're helping each other lift weights in the morning?
I don't have a problem with it. I think these guys understand they're playing the golf course. Yes, they want to beat each other. No, they weren't palling around and hanging out like a Tuesday practice round on the golf course, which I think we would have had more of a problem with if they're like, you know, buddy-buddy walking down the fairway, slapping each other on the back. They barely spoke to each other during the round, so I don't care what they do in the pre-round workouts. This is what they do normally at home, so why change up your routine when you're sure. about to go out and try to win a major championship?
Yeah, I would just have a hard time not talking about the Open later on in the day. I'd be like, how are you attacking the third today? What are you?
Well, be careful the guy spotting for you that you're playing against and you're trying to beat that day. I mean, all of a sudden he kind of looks the other way when you're trying to put up
right.
you know,
exactly.
280 on the bench press.
Right, I had to go get a little water. What about Fleetwood? You know, he's the other one coming out of this. I mean, and not to take away from the way that he played on Sunday, you know, he attacked a course that obviously played a lot easier. Fleetwood was absolutely fantastic.
He really was, and he is a tremendous player. He is going to be good for a long time. He's another young guy. I mean, we look at all these young guys. The game is in such a good place going forward. I know people say, well, Tiger's not going to be around forever, and no one can beat Tiger Woods. No, but what we're going to have is collectively, and I count about 11 or 12 players who are all between 25 and 32 years old, collectively, they are going to be Tiger Woods. They are going to be the guys who are battling each other on major championship Sundays. I'd love to say that Tommy Fleetwood is, he's going to get a few of these. You know, he plays so well in majors, he's going to win. You start running out of majors, and I understand when people do this. You look at Fleetwood and say, he's going to get a couple, and you look at Koepka and say, oh, yeah, that guy's so good. He'll get a few more. And DJ, oh, man, he's talented. He's got a bunch in him. And then you look at JT and Spieth and Rory and Ricky and all these other guys, and after a while, you look at all of them, you count up the majors that you're giving them, and you've accounted for the next 37 years, and it just doesn't work that way. And so at some point, these guys sort of have to take advantage of when they're in contention. That said, I still think that Tommy Fleetwood is a guy that's going to win at some point. He's still, like I said, very young, and I would look at him at Carnoustie. If you're looking for a very early wager at Carnoustie, I would say Tommy Fleetwood's the guy that you might want to look at.
Jason, along those lines, in terms of, you know, selling the game and this younger generation, Koepka's so locked in, so focused on the course, there's no glimpse of personality. What is he actually like when he lets loose? Is he a guy that, you know, I'm sure he's going to at some point make the late night TV rounds again. Like, what's Brooks Koepka the guy like when he's not out there competing like a badass?
It's really tough to say. I mean, he's very much off the course like he is on the course. I think that...
Is that bad?
Certainly, you'd like guys to have maybe a little more charisma. I think Rory's got probably more charisma than he gets credit for. Rory is sort of a very open, honest, friendly, eloquent kind of guy. Jordan Spieth is very analytical, and Jordan Spieth can sit down in an interview chair and really take you inside his mind. Justin Thomas is very much the same way. I don't think you're getting that from Brooks Koepka. It doesn't mean he's a bad guy. It doesn't mean that he's not friendly. It doesn't mean he doesn't like to smile and have a good time. I just don't know that he's sort of that loquacious when speaking about himself and speaking about golf. I remember talking to him a few years ago, and he said, look, I'm not a golfer. I'm an athlete. And when I'm off, I'm not watching golf. I'm watching football and basketball. That's okay. I mean, I get that. Look, when I'm not working and I'm a golf writer, I like to watch football and basketball over golf sometimes too. It's okay. You need to get away from it. I just don't know if he's necessarily the guy that those running golf, those running the PGA Tour, the USGA, and other organizations need to be carrying the banner for the game moving forward, if that's sort of the most diplomatic way I can put it.
You know, and Jason, we'll close it out here. If we look back 10 years from now on this tournament, are you going to remember more about the way the USGA messed things up, or are you going to remember more of the Koepka performance?
I think it's USGA, and I think it's probably Phil Mickelson second and probably Brooks Koepka third.
Yeah.
You just tend to remember certain things from major championships. When I say 2006 Wingfoot, you don't automatically think, oh, that was the Jeff Ogilvy year.
No, you remember Phil hitting down the left sideline, left fairway on the 18th.
Of course. When I say 1999 Open Championship, you don't say, oh, that was a great win for Paul Laurie in the playoff. You say, oh, that was Vandeveld. Yeah, of course I remember that one. So there are certain things we remember about major championships that supersede the actual winner of the event. And I do think that maybe winning two in a row helps us remember Brooks Koepka a little bit better, but I do think we're going to wind up remembering other things about this event, especially from Saturday, over what happened on Sunday afternoon.
Jason Sobel, senior golf writer, Action Network HQ. Check him out. Does a fantastic job. Jason, thanks for the time, bud.
You got it. Thanks for having me, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.